Continuing with a study in dating and preparing for marriage, if you remember last time, we left off talking about what I loosely term dating, like a friendship type of dating. And from here on out in the study, starting with right now, when I say dating, I will be referring to romantic dating, as you normally think of it when two people are going out with the view to a serious relationship and ultimately marriage. So what I want to talk about starting out is the purpose of dating is to find a spouse. The purpose of dating is not to hook up, to use the modern terminology for it. The Bible calls this fornication. And the next couple of points that I bring out here are copied and pasted from the study I did in 2013 now it was, called A War for Your, there's A War for Your Minds, kids. I don't know if you remember that, but one of the things that I talked about there is in that study is that there's a war out there for your minds as far as sexual lust and fornication goes, and to tell you that it's okay to have sex before marriage. So the things that I'm going to say here, you've heard before, but I think they're important enough that I want to repeat them again. Fornication is defined as voluntary sexual intercourse between a man in restricted use, an unmarried man, and an unmarried woman, in Scripture extended to adultery. So fornication is sexual intercourse. So intercourse, and I will define it. I'm not going to read the whole definition because it really has nothing to do with sex, but I will read part D when it talks about sexual intercourse. Intercourse in that context is sexual connection. Okay, so a connection then is the action of connecting or joining together, the condition of being connected or joined together. So therefore, fornication is connecting any part of one's body, which could be a sexual organ, hand, mouth, whatever, any part of your body, to the sexual organs of another person's body. And I know, not to get too offensive or gross or anything, but that includes oral sex, that includes manual stimulation or hand jobs, to use a modern term for that. That includes any of that stuff. So if you want to know what fornication is, the easy way to think about it is, if any part of your body, any part, I don't care, from head to toe, is touching the sexual organ of another person's body, or if any part of their body, head to toe, is touching your sexual organ, it's fornication. So that's the easy way to think about it. And that should remove all doubt as to what fornication is scripturally and just bearing out the definitions. Now, fornication, which is sex before marriage, is a sin and it is forbidden by God. And Christians absolutely must abstain from this. There are a lot of Christians that have some really flaky ideas about, number one, what fornication even is. A lot of people don't even consider oral sex sex, thanks to old Slick Willie, Bill Clinton. Remember that, because he said what he did with Monica Lewinsky, he said was not sex, because it was oral sex. Well, it was sex. Oral sex is sex, as I've just defined there. But you have a whole generation of people then, from that point and forward, especially kids in my generation, I was in high school at that time, think, oh, well, if it's good for the president, it must be all right for me, right? Well, that's not the case. And that, what a reprehensible thing that the leader of this country would have done. But anyway, a lot of Christians have a very warped idea, because of the Bibles that they're reading, of what fornication is. Because these modern versions translate the verse that I'm just going to read here to you, 1 Corinthians 6:18, which says, "Flee fornication. Every sin that a man doeth is without the body, but he that committeth fornication sinneth against his own body." The NIV and other modern perversions of the Scripture say flee sexual immorality. Well, what is sexual immorality? It's pretty much anything you want it to be, because immorality is something that goes against the social norm of what is acceptable and what is right and good. So basically, whatever the culture says, if it goes above and beyond that, then it's immoral. So that would include pretty much anything that you want could be under the umbrella or not under the umbrella of sexual immorality. And I've argued with this. Christians, quote unquote, have argued with me about this. I did a video on what fornication is on YouTube. I covered the same type of stuff I'm talking about right now. And people will write and say, no, sex before marriage isn't a sin. And then they'll give you the verse. It says sexual immorality, and that means bestiality, or that means sodomy, or that means rape, or incest, or that, whatever. It means something else besides just plain old fornication between a boy and a girl, a man and a woman. But the Bible forbids any of this stuff. Look at 1 Thessalonians 4 and verse 3. 1 Thessalonians 4:3. The King James Bible is crystal clear on this. There is no debate. Don't even come up to me and don't even say, well, what about, it kind of seems like there's a little bit of room for leeway here. There's no room for leeway. None at all. 1 Thessalonians 4 and verse 3. For this is the will of God. You want to know, everybody wants to know, what is the will of God for my life? I just want to determine the will of God. I just want to know what God's will is for my life. I'll tell you what it is. Right here is the will of God. Even your sanctification, that ye should abstain from fornication. You want to know the will of God? Don't have sex before you're married. That is the will of God for your life. There's no question about it. You don't have to wonder about it. God tells you right there. That is His will for your life. Of course, there are other things, but that's one of them. That's a nice one. Most of the things in the will of God in our life are not spelled out that clearly. You got to compare the scripture and look at what scripture says as a whole and look at the gray areas and make sure you're within the boundaries of what God's will is. This one God made really plain for you. That's the will of God. Now, what about hugging or kissing or cuddling or snuggling or those kind of things? Because that would be the next question. Well, okay, where is the line exactly? Well, I told you the line. Don't let any part of your body touch the sexual organs of another. That's the line right there. That is, cut it off right there. That is fornication. But hugging, kissing, cuddling, snuggling, those kind of things are not fornication and are therefore not necessarily sinful, but they are a slippery slope towards it. They're things that you want to be careful with. Because anybody that's ever had sex knows, anybody that is married, you know that normally it just doesn't start, you just jump in a sack and go at it, right? Usually the other kind of stuff comes along first, right? And you build up to it, right? Now, if women were wired as men were, maybe there wouldn't be that other stuff. It'd just be, you know, get right down to business. But being how it is, usually you build up to it, right? All these things build up to it. So when they're not fornication and they're not necessarily sinful, but you better be careful. Because those things lead very easily to fornication. Now, within marriage, that's wonderful. I mean, it's not fornication in marriage. There's nothing wrong with that at all. Kiss, cuddle, hug, whatever you want, as much as you want. Nothing wrong with that. That's a good thing to do. But be very cautious about it when you're dating somebody. Things like these may be lawful, but they're not expedient, necessarily. Look at 1 Corinthians 6 and verse 12. There's a lot of things in the Bible that just according to the letter would be lawful. But a lot of those same things might not be the best idea. Just because something's lawful doesn't mean you want to jump in headlong and go for it. For instance, I talked about alcohol in the Bible studies here a few weeks ago. Alcohol is lawful. It is not a sin to have a glass of beer. But just like the kissing, hugging, snuggling thing, it leads... The alcohol could lead to drunkenness. So when you take that first beer, you could take a second one and a third one, and before you know it, you're going to be drunk. It works the same way with sexual passion. So you want to be really careful with that kind of stuff. 1 Corinthians 6 and verse 12 says, all things are lawful unto me, but all things are not expedient. All things are lawful for me, but I will not be brought under the power of any. And let me tell you, if there is one force in the universe that can bring you under its power, it is sexual lust. Anybody that's an adult knows that. That is the most powerful force on the face of the planet. I guarantee you, it has brought down many, many a man. The wisest man that ever lived, Solomon, was brought down by outlandish women that caused him to sin. The strongest man that ever lived, Samson, was brought down by his eyes, by the lust of his eyes. It will bring you down. Do not be deceived. You think, oh, I can handle it. No, you can't. I guarantee you, you can't handle it. You get to a certain point, you can't handle it. There could be an angel sitting on your bed saying, if you do this right now, you're going to burn in hell for all eternity. And you say, I'm going to take my chance. Don't think that you can play with it. You play with fire, you'll get burned. 1 Corinthians 10 and verse 23 says, all things are lawful for me, but all things are not expedient. All things are lawful for me, but all things edify not. Yep, these things might be lawful, but are they expedient? Do they edify? And the other thing you want to take into consideration is the person you're dating. Now, if the person you're dating is a good and godly Christian man or woman, and they have the same idea about things as you, and they have the same limits as you, okay, you'd be a little more safe in that case. If you're dating some loose, strange woman, you think, oh, I can control myself. Yeah, right. You shouldn't be dating a loose, strange woman anyway. But if you were, you're going to really be in trouble if you start to go down that road. Expedient means conducive to advantage in general or to a definite purpose, fit, proper, or suitable to the circumstances of the case. So just think about that. Whatever you're doing on your dates, Is it conducive to your advantage in general, or are you treading on dangerous ground, which could end up having you create a sin unto death that would get you put out of the church and potentially mess up the rest of your life with pregnancy, unwanted pregnancy, where you're not even married and all that kind of thing, could end up turning out very, very badly for you. So be very, very careful with that. Physical contact with a person of the opposite sex excites lust within us. Now, this is a good thing in the confines of marriage. To have lust for your wife or for your husband is a good thing. And there's nothing wrong with that. If you want to sit there at work and lust about your wife all day long, go ahead. As long as you're getting your work done, go ahead. There's not a thing wrong with that. But if it's about somebody that's not your wife, there's a major problem with that. Jesus said, whoso does that commits adultery. But when it's inside marriage, it says marriage is honorable in all and the bed undefiled, but whoremongers and adulterers God will judge. It's not the act which God judges. It is the actors, the actors, the people that are doing it. It's not what they're doing. It's who is doing it. If it's within marriage, it is pure and honorable. Look at Proverbs 5, verses 18 through 19. Proverbs 5, verses 18 through 19. It says, let thy fountain be blessed, and rejoice with the wife of thy youth. Let her be as the loving hind and pleasant roe. Let her breast satisfy thee at all times, and be thou ravished always with her love. That's a good thing in marriage. Solomon tells him, be ravished with your wife's love. To be ravished literally means to be carried away. That's what the definition means. I don't have it here, but it means to be carried away. And it's interesting. We use the terminology now. Have you ever heard people say, we just got carried away? You did. You got ravished. You got carried away by your sexual lust. You're exactly right. Look at Song of Solomon 4 and verse 9. Song of Solomon 4 and verse 9. It says, thou hast ravished my heart, my sister, my spouse. Thou hast ravished my heart with one of thine eyes, with one chain of thy neck. His wife, obviously, was very beautiful, and she could take him with her eyelids. Now, we're told not to let the strange woman take you with her eyelids, but having your wife take you with hers, not a thing wrong with that. But this is a very dangerous thing outside of marriage. Look at Proverbs 7, 13 through 23. And this is the text that I read this morning for the call to worship, part of it. And I'm going to read it again. First, Proverbs 7 in verse 13 through 23. Look at the danger here. Here's a young man that doesn't have wisdom and that doesn't have discretion. And he's out there walking around where he shouldn't be walking around. He's not paying attention. He's not being careful. And all of a sudden, a strange woman comes out, like somebody that's hunting for him. And she catches him. Look at this in verse 13. So she caught him and kissed him. See how it starts? It starts with a kiss. Kiss isn't sinful necessarily, but look how it starts. She caught him and kissed him, and with an impudent face said unto him, impudent means wanting in shame or modesty, shameless, unblushing, immodest, indelicate. You meet a woman like that, and she kisses you, and she's got an impudent face, run. Run away. As enticing and as interesting as that might sound to you, run. Get away, because, well, I'll show you what's going to happen in the rest of this chapter. I have peace offerings with me. This day I have paid my vows. Oh, she's religious. She's a nice Christian girl, don't you know? I have peace offerings. She says, don't believe everybody that tells you that they're religious, that they're a Christian. Therefore came I forth to meet thee, diligently to seek thy face, and I have found thee. See, she makes you feel really important. Oh, I've been seeking you out. I've been looking at you, and I have finally found you. I've been looking for somebody just like you for so long. You say, oh, man, I feel really important and special now. I have decked my bed with coverings of tapestry, with carved works, with fine linen of Egypt. Right there is when you know, okay, I need to get out of here. She starts talking about that. I have perfumed my bed with myrrh, aloes, and cinnamon. Come, let us take our fill of love until the morning. Let us solace ourselves with love. For the good man is not at home. He has gone a long journey. That's her husband. He hath taken a bag of money with him and will come home at the day appointed. And he'll probably kill you when he gets back. With her much fair speech, she caused him to yield. With the flattering of her lips, she forced him. See, she rapes this man. But she doesn't rape him physically. She rapes him with her flattering words. She draws him in. And he can't deal with it. He can't resist it. He goeth after her straightway as an ox goeth to the slaughter, or as a foal to the correction of the stocks. See, the foal doesn't even know that it's for his life. He's going to die. It's going to be a sin unto death, and he doesn't even know it. Just like that stupid animal that goes to the slaughter and doesn't have a clue what he's walking into. Till a dart strike through his liver, as a bird hasteth to the snare, and knoweth not that it is for his life. Hearken unto me now, therefore, O ye children, and attend to the words of my mouth. Kids in this church, people in this church, listen to the words of my mouth. Listen to what I'm reading you here. Let not thine heart decline to her ways. Go not astray in her paths, for she hath cast down many wounded, yea, many strong men, not many weak men, many strong men have been slain by her. Her house is the way to death, going down to the chamber, or the way to hell, going down to the chambers of death. You want to get yourself death, and it could be physical death with STDs and that kind of thing, or her husband coming back and killing you. But I can guarantee you it's going to be a spiritual type of death, not an eternal spiritual death, but it's going to be a death to fellowship in the church, because you'll be put out of the church for that kind of thing, for fornication, if you get found out. And you will, be sure, your sin will find you out. Look at Proverbs 6, 24 through 26. These are things that parents should be reading their children frequently. Read them Proverbs 5, 6, and 7. Teach them about the dangers of these things. Teach them about the dangers of strange women and strange men. Proverbs 6, 24 through 26 says, to keep thee from the evil woman, this is what the law of the Lord does, from the flattery of the tongue of the strange woman. Lust not after her beauty in thine heart, neither let her take thee with her eyelids. For by means of a whorish woman a man is brought to a piece of bread, and the adulteress will hunt for the precious life. And she will. She hunts for the precious life. It's almost like a jewel in her crown if she can find that innocent virgin out there. Because that makes her feel like, I don't know, it's an accomplishment for her to find some innocent life out there. So be really careful. When you're that innocent life, there are strange, crazy, evil women out there that would prey on you for that. I need to be careful about that as well. How many women wouldn't love to get a preacher and to say, well, I had him? And I've been told that that is a danger. I haven't had to worry about that right now. It doesn't seem like women are generally interested in me, which I guess is a blessing. But anyway, it could be. So it's something that I have to watch out for. Proverbs 5, 20 through 23. Fortunately, I've got some good old doctrine that it's like kryptonite to Superman. You just give them the doctrine and they go running. So that's a good way to get rid of them. They start coming on to you. Just say, hey, you read the NIV or the King James. Well, they'll be out of there in about 3 seconds. Proverbs 5, verses 20 through 23. And why wilt thou, my son, be ravished with a strange woman and embrace the bosom of a stranger? For the ways of man are before the eyes of the Lord, and he pondereth all his goings. His own iniquity shall take the wicked himself, and he shall be holden with the cords of his sins. He shall die without instruction, and in the greatness of his folly he shall go astray. So you want to be really careful with this kind of stuff. Because remember, when sin hath conceived, it bringeth forth death. And that may even be my next verse. As a matter of fact, that is my next verse. Turn to James 1 and verse 14 and 15. James 1 and verse 14 and 15. I'll show you the progression of sin. Here's how sin works. And any of you out there who are sinners, which is all of you, myself included, know this is exactly how it works. In James 1, 14 through 15. It says, but every man is tempted when he is drawn away of his own lust and enticed. Then when lust hath conceived, it bringeth forth sin. And sin, when it is finished, bringeth forth death. See, it starts with a temptation. It starts with your own lust. And then the lust conceives, and it brings forth sin. And then when sin is finished, it brings forth death. The lust might be that nice little innocent kiss when you're on a date. Then the sin might come after that, the fornication. And then comes the death. The death to fellowship in the Lord's church. It's very important not to make provision for your flesh to fulfill its lusts. The last thing you want to do is feed your lust. Look at Romans 13, verse 14. Especially if you know you have a weakness. And I'll just tell you, every man in this church has a weakness when it comes to sexual temptation. If you have a weakness in that, and you do, be careful. Don't make provision for it. Don't go down that road. Proverbs 13, 14 says, but put ye on the Lord Jesus Christ and make not provision for the flesh to fulfill the lust thereof. If you have a struggle with alcohol, don't go to the bar. If you have a struggle with sexual lust, don't go to the strip bar. Actually, never go to the strip bar. Even if you don't have a problem with sexual lust, never go there. Don't go there. Don't. If you have a problem with that, don't even go to YouTube. And especially, don't click on that video that you think, oh, I wonder if that's okay or not. Don't even click on it. When I see a video like that, as enticing it is to click on it, don't click on it. Because it leads down. It's that James 1 progression. You're drawn away of your lust and tempted, then lust brings forth sin. And then sin brings forth death. Don't even go there. 1 Peter 2 and verse 11. Dearly beloved, I beseech you as strangers and pilgrims, abstain from fleshly lust which war against the soul. This is one of Satan's chief areas of battle for you. Put on the whole armor of God that you may be able to withstand the wiles of the devil, as Chris told us this morning. This is Satan, one of Satan's greatest assaults. This is one of his greatest fronts to war against your soul is with your fleshly lusts. Now, we would all be wise to determine, those of us who are single anyway, to determine our limits ahead of time, that when the time comes, you'll know when to flee. You say, you know, okay, I'm not going to have any physical contact because I know myself. I'm just no physical contact. That's fine. You know, you're erring on the side of caution. No problem with that. I'm just going to hug, no kissing. I'm going to kiss, but that's it, or whatever. And that should be about it. No, don't go any further than kissing. So that's your line. But anyway, you make sure you know what your limit is ahead of time. And that way you know. You've already determined, okay, I will not do this. I will not go past this level. It's the prudent man in Proverbs 22:3. The prudent man foreseeth the evil and hideth himself, but the simple pass on and are punished. Now, if you get to that position, and all of a sudden the temptation is strong, then it's time not to fight. It's time to flee. 1 Corinthians 6:18, flee fornication. There are a few sins the Bible tells you to flee. Fornication, idolatry, I think there's another one, I can't remember what it is right now. But those sins you flee, especially fornication, literally flee, run, get away. And tell her about it, or him about it later. But get out of there. The purpose of dating is not to merely have a good time either. Though dates should be enjoyable. But the purpose of dating is not just to go have a good time with somebody of the opposite sex. And the reason for that is, well, there's many reasons, but one of the things is that delicate feelings are at risk of being hurt, both yours and theirs, so you don't want to take dating lightly. Because especially maybe as a guy, you think, I just want to go out, you know, just date some different women and have a good time, just go out and have fun. Well, chances are the girls aren't thinking that. The girls are thinking, oh, he really likes me, and she's getting really excited. Or maybe you might be the one that's really excited, and she just wanted to go out and get a free meal or something. You know, because that's the great thing about women dating. You get to go out and get a free meal. At least that's the way it should be. Unfortunately, it's not that way a lot of times. I was at a party one time. Party, I use that term loosely. It was a board game playing party. And I forget what the name of the game even was. But anyway, you had there was a question, and each person, each team member, would put forth their answer on the table, and then whosoever turn it was would pick the answer that they liked the best, and people would bet on which answer they'd pick and that kind of thing. Anyway, the question was, what's the best part about being a woman? And I was just kind of being goofy, and I said, well, you don't have to pay on a date. And this one girl said, I don't know who you're dating, but like for her, her experience was, well, yeah, women always pay on the date, or at least they pay for their own, which is pitiful in my opinion, at least where I come from. Man pays on the date, at least the first date, you know, the first few dates anyway. If you're married or something, that's different. But if you're married, it doesn't matter if your wife pays anyway. She's just taking it out of your bank account. I mean, what's the difference? Oh, I bought you this nice present, honey. Oh, thanks for spending my money on me. That's very nice of you. Anyway, if this is your approach, that dating is just a big fun time, just a nice, you know, just out there taking it very lightly, then you're likely not going to respect the person you're dating, for one, and also you might be more likely to relax your guard and get carried away with stuff that we just got done talking about. So you do want to take this seriously, though it should be fun. I'm not saying that you shouldn't have a good time and enjoy laughs and that kind of thing, but you should also be careful, because just know, feelings are at stake here. The goal and end of dating should be to find a husband or a wife. When dating somebody, pay very close attention to words and actions and personality and character of the person. That's the primary thing you want to do when you're dating, is watch that person. analyze them, scrutinize them. Don't let them know that you're doing it, but in the back of your mind, pay very close attention to that person. Listen to every word that they say, because people will tell you who they are. If you listen carefully, most people will tell you who they are. And when they tell you, believe them. Remember that. When somebody tells you who they are, believe them. And I'm talking about subtle things. They'll tell you. When you're dating, you want to keep your eyes wide open. After you're married, you want to keep them half shut. I think it was Elder Conrad Jarrell that said that. That's a good way. That will help you to find a good wife, and it'll help you to stay married to that good wife. Keep your eyes wide open when you're dating. Pay attention to everything, to the little things. But then once you're married, keep them half shut. You don't want to scrutinize your wife and your husband over every little thing. You pick your battles wisely, and if something just you really can't stand, then you deal with it. But when you're dating, find those deal breakers. See, there's no deal breakers in marriage. Once you get married, it's not like, okay, that's a deal breaker, I'm out of here. There are no deal breakers when you get married. You're stuck. You're bound to that person, and you need to make it work at all costs. But when you're dating, find the deal breakers. And when you find one, cut it off quickly. If you go on these dating sites, you can, like eHarmony, I know, personal experience, I was going to get into that in just a minute. If you see somebody there that you like, you can send them 5 questions, and then they send you 5 questions, and then you go to the next level, and you send them 3 questions where they can answer in paragraph form, and so on. Anyway, so one of the questions I always ask is, what are your views of traditional gender roles? And most of them say, you know, I like traditional gender roles, and I want to have a relationship that celebrates them, or something like that. Some of them, once in a while, you'll find some feminazi on there that will say, I have no use whatsoever for traditional gender roles, and I think my partner and I should define our own gender roles. That's one of those things where red flag, when you see that, at least in my opinion, and in my biblical opinion, when you see that, run. Just get out of there. You're done with her. If you see if she had good answers on everything else, maybe you want to ask for clarification. I've done that before. What do you mean by that? What do you think of Ephesians 5? Husbands submit to wives submit to your husbands, and you know, husband's the head of the wife. And then more than likely, she'll tell you, I don't buy that stuff. So anyway, that's a deal breaker. So look for that kind of thing when you're on a date. Don't just ask all the fun questions about what your favorite sports team is and your favorite music band and this and that. Ask some of the deep questions. Now, with me, that's not a problem because that's all I do. I always ask the deep questions. I always ask the serious questions. And like my mom always tells me, try to act like a person for once, you know. So I go to the other extreme. Ask those tough questions, though. Figure out what this person's worldview is as soon as you can. Now, when it becomes apparent that the person you're dating is not husband or wife material, then it's time to stop dating. Don't date a person whenever you found out, you know what, this person's just not for me, or this person's just not husband or wife material, period, or their personality is not for me, or whatever. Then it's just time to cut it off. It's going to be hard. Anytime you cut it off, it's always uncomfortable, but the longer it goes on, the harder it is. It's like if you have an addiction to something, you have an addiction to alcohol. If you cut it off right at the very beginning when you realize, you know what, I kind of need to have a drink every day, it's not quite as hard. When you cut it off, when you say, I need to have a 12-pack every day, it's a lot harder. So cut off the relationship as soon as you can. All right, let's talk about when and who to date. And when I say when, I mean when in life. So when in life is a good time or a proper time to begin dating? Well, in that the purpose of dating is to find a spouse, it would not be wise to begin dating until you're ready and able to be married. So if the purpose is to find a spouse, then it doesn't make sense to start dating before you're ready to be married, or before, you know, you would be ready within a year from that point or something, however long the dating process would take. For men, this would mean that, well, the man has to be able to support and provide for his family. So this would mean that marriage by extension and dating, marriage and dating by extension should mean that he would wait till he has a job and sufficient means to provide for a wife and potentially a family, but at least for a wife. Just to give you the verse in 1 Timothy 5 and verse 8, a man is supposed to provide for the needs of his family. And if he doesn't, he's worse than an infidel, Paul says. 1 Timothy 5 and verse 8, said, but if any provide not for his own, and especially for those of his own house, he hath denied the faith and is worse than an infidel. So the man needs to be a provider. And if you can't provide, then you shouldn't be dating at that point. You want to wait until you have the sufficient income. Let me show you a verse here back in Proverbs 24 and verse 27. Proverbs 24 and verse 27. Now, this could very well be applied more in more of a natural sense that I'm going to apply it, but extrapolated out, I don't think it's too hard to do to see it in a familial sense as well. Proverbs 24 and verse 27, it says, "Prepare thy work without and make it fit for thyself in the field, and afterwards build thine house." So you could take this to building a physical brick and mortar house. Wait till you get a good job. You know, back in the day, this was an agrarian society, so make it fit for yourself in the field. Get yourself a good job and a career, then build the house. So that would go for the physical brick and mortar house. Don't take yourself out a huge mortgage right when you graduate from college or graduate from high school or whatever, as soon as some bank will give you the money. Don't do that. Get yourself established in a career, save some money, and so on. The same would work in a familial sense. Wait to build, because your family is called your house. Remember the house of Stephanus, the house of so-and-so. So don't build your family until you are at a point where you've made it fit for yourself in the field, where you have a sufficient means of income. You don't have to be rich, but you at least want to have an income that you can provide for somebody. If you're just in high school still, you don't even have a job, well, this isn't the time to be dating. It doesn't make any sense to date if you don't have means to provide. For a man, this also means that dating and marriage should wait until he's mature enough to be the head and ruler of his wife and family. Look at Ephesians 5, 23 through 24. A good test for a man. Just read through the Bible about all the things that it says a husband should be. And if you look at that and that scares you and says, "Whoa, I'm not ready for that," well, then you're not ready yet. And if you're not ready for that, then don't be out there dating, because you might end up finding somebody and getting thrown into that. You at least, I mean, like they say, experience is the best teacher, and probably none of us are ready to be the perfect husband before we get married. But at least if you can look at that and say, "Yep, I see what that says, I understand what that says, and I think I could reasonably do that to the best of my ability with God's grace as my help," then you're ready. But if you look at that and say, "Oh boy, I don't know about that," you're not ready yet. Ephesians 5, 23 through 24. It says, "For the husband is the head of the wife, even as Christ is the head of the church, and he is the Savior of the body. Therefore, as the church is subject unto Christ, so let the wives be to their own husbands in everything." So that's a major responsibility for a husband, to be the head, to be the king, to be the ruler of your family and of your wife. That's a big responsibility. Your wife's going to be looking to you to make the hard decisions. At least she should. I'll get into that later. You don't want to look for a woman that's going to be wearing the pants and telling you what to do. And especially if you find a stronger woman, you really need to be a strong man. Because some women have natural leadership tendencies, right? And they want to jump in there and just kind of take control. And you need to say, "No, I'm in control here. I will take your opinion. I will give it due consideration. But I'm making the decisions around here." You need to be that kind of a man if you want to be a Christian husband. It would not be advisable for a man who wants to be married to intentionally wait until he's been living by himself for many years before marrying, because you get accustomed to living alone and it may be hard for you to adjust to life with a wife and children. So on the one hand, you don't want to jump into this thing too early before you can provide and before you're mature and ready for it. On the other hand, you don't want to say, "You know what, I don't want to be married till I'm 30. Now I'm 32, I'm older than that, but it's not by choice, right? It just didn't work, nothing worked out. But you don't want to say, "I want to wait until I'm in my 30s, go out there, sow my wild oats, kind of have a good time, get to travel, get to do this and that, and really enjoy life to the fullest, and then I want to get married." Well, you might get to that period in your life after you've lived it up for a long time, and you might decide, "I don't want to get married anymore. I like being single." Or if you do get married, it may be hard. And if I ever get married, it would probably be hard for me after many, many years of living single by myself. I'm sure you know all about it, right? You were single for a long time. That's probably pretty tough, I would think. So you want to be careful with that. Same thing goes for women. I'll get to that in just a second. Now, for a woman, when should a woman be ready to marry? Well, in that a woman is supposed to bear children and guide the house, this would mean that dating and marriage should wait until she's mature enough to handle these duties, which do require a high level of responsibility. Any woman that's married, especially women that are married with kids, know that that's a lot of responsibility to guide the house and take care of all that stuff. I mean, you're running a little microcosm of a business there where you got to manage the finances, you got to go out and get the food, and you got to make sure the laundry's done and the cooking's done and all that kind of stuff, and take care of your husband. I mean, there's all kinds of stuff that goes into that. There's a lot of responsibility, so you don't want to jump into that when you're 13 years old or something. You're not ready for it. Look at 1 Timothy 5 and verse 14. 1 Timothy 5 and verse 14. And 13 was an exaggeration. I'd say, unfortunately, girls today probably aren't ready for that when they're in their early 20s. Back several generations ago, they would have been ready for it in their late teens. But nowadays, a lot of girls wouldn't be ready for that. They're maybe never ready for it. And for that matter, men are no better. A lot of men are boys the whole way until they're in their 40s or more. 1 Timothy 5 and verse 14, Paul says, I will therefore that the younger women marry, bear children, guide the house, give none occasion to the adversary to speak reproachfully. So here is Paul's order for the younger women. He's talking about widows there in this case, but younger women in general. Marry, bear children, guide the house, give none occasion to the adversary to speak reproachfully. So that's the duties of a woman. And if you're not ready for that, then you're not ready to date yet. Remember that she also needs to be able to submit to her husband. So if you're not mature enough for that, that would be another thing. Remember Ephesians 5, 22 through 24. We're told that wives submit to your husbands in everything. So the other area is true. The other case is true also, where if a woman waits too long to get married, then it's hard to submit to her husband. And I'll get into that in just a second. The thing is, if you're lucky enough, blessed enough to date a godly young woman that has been raised in a Christian home and has seen husband and wife relate to each other, where the husband is the head of the wife and the wife submits to the husband, the husband loves the wife and cherishes her and takes care of her and all those kind of things. If a young girl has grown up and witnessed that, then she's not going to have a problem submitting to her husband because she's seen it. She's been in training for 18 years or however long watching it. So you don't have to worry about that so much. If you're dating somebody that didn't grow up in that kind of a family, then I kind of look at it as that proverb, you know, get them young and train them up, right? So train up a wife in the way she should go, and when she's old, she won't depart from it, you know, taking the Proverbs 22:6. So sometimes it's good to get them young where they're still impressionable. I know that sounds terribly chauvinistic, but anyway, it's a good idea. Titus 2 and verse 5, look at this. So on the other hand, though, a woman, it is not advisable for a woman who wants to be married to intentionally first go out there and get herself a college education, get herself a career, make her own way in the world, and live on her own and all this kind of thing. I'm not saying any of those things are necessarily wrong, but I wouldn't say that this should be a woman's goal, that I want to go out there and kind of, you know, just make it on my own just so I can say to myself, I don't really need a man, I can take care of myself, and then I'll get married after that, once I've satisfied, you know, my longing to be able to take care of myself. That's not a good idea, because chances are, once you've found out that you don't need a man, you're not going to want a man. And if you do get a man, you're not going to want to submit to that man, because after all, I don't need you. I lived on my own for a long time without you. Don't be telling me what to do. Titus 2 and verse 5 says to be... Paul wants the older women to teach the younger women to be discreet, chaste, keepers at home, good, obedient to their own husbands, that the word of God be not blasphemed. So don't go out there and intentionally be single too long, because you'll have a hard time obeying your husband. You'll have a hard time wanting to be at home and taking care of the kids if you've been out there slaying the beast in the corporate world for a decade or more. All right, now, deciding who to date. So we took pretty well taken care of when in life. And I'm going to get into more details with each age group, with teenagers, with people in their 20s and 30s, 40s and 50s, and so on. And I'm going to give my observations my experience and Scripture has shown me of some suggestions and things with those different age groups. So I'll get into some more details on this when to date thing. But just in general, you don't want to date until you can at least fulfill the duties of a husband and a wife. And I'll leave it at that. And we'll talk about the specifics of ages later. So deciding who to date now. Well, the first thing you want to do is look for a believer of like faith. That's the first thing you want to look for in a husband or in a wife. Now, when the husbands and wives are supposed to be heirs together of the grace of life, 1 Peter 3:7, and it's hard for two people to walk together except to be agreed, Amos 3:3, it's strongly recommended for a Christian to look for a spouse who shares their faith. If you're supposed to be heirs together of the grace of life so that your prayers aren't hindered, let me get that whole verse for you in 1 Peter 3:7. 1 Peter 3:7, likewise ye husbands, dwell with them according to knowledge, that is, with their wives, giving honor unto the wife as unto the weaker vessel, and as being heirs together of the grace of life, that your prayers not be hindered, be not hindered. That pretty much sounds like Peter's talking to a husband and wife that share their faith together, right? I mean, this is kind of the assumption in the scripture that if, especially if you are not, if you become a Christian after you were married, that might be a different story. But if you're a Christian already and you're looking for a spouse, the assumption is you marry somebody in the faith. That's the wise thing to do. Like Amos said, can two walk together except they be agreed? Try marrying somebody that doesn't share your faith. It's hard, especially depending on how big that chasm is there between what your ideals are. It can be very difficult. So the first place a Christian should look for someone would naturally be his own church. Now in our church, in a small church, it might be harder. If there might not be any single people, or there might not be single people you're compatible with, or whatever. But that would be the first place one would naturally look, is in his own church. Long-distance relationships aren't ideal. I mean, they're possible, and they work out, but it's best if you meet somebody locally. That would be the best thing to do. Now, if there are no prospects in his church, then you might want to check out other churches of like faith. And your pastor might be able to talk to other pastors and find out if there are single people in those churches and do a little matchmaking. I don't mind being a matchmaker at all. So if you're looking, then I can call around and see if there are any. I might take just a small finder's fee or something like that. But, you know, other than that, it's better than paying $30 a month on eHarmony, right? I wouldn't charge that much. So anyway. Now, if there are no prospects in other churches, then you can look outside the church for somebody with hopes of them converting. Now, this is more difficult. It's possible, you guys, you know. I know other people that it's worked out with. But it's kind of it's a long shot. I mean, you're in it for the long. When you start doing something like that, you're in it for the long haul. And don't be afraid if you end up going through a whole bunch of different prospects and weeding them out one after the other until you finally find one. This can be done the old-fashioned way of meeting a girl in person who you find attractive and then asking her for a number and calling her up, getting to know her, going out on a date. You know, kind of like people how they used to do things. You can also do it the more modern way, do it the dating website thing if it hasn't worked out for you, the in-person thing. Especially nowadays when it's hard to meet people in person because they're all staring at their phones, Facebooking. So you can go and you know, catch their attention on a dating website, possibly. I know Christians who have met their spouse on a dating website. So do you, for that matter. We have that in our own church. I know Christians in other churches as well that met their spouse on a dating website. So it's possible. It certainly can work out. I'd recommend using one that you have to pay for, since you get what you pay for. I've tried these free things before, and just not a good idea. You know what a tightwad I am. But, you know, when you're looking for a wife, it's kind of an important thing. You know, it's maybe worth putting a few bucks into. You know, I mean, how much research would you do when you're going to find a car or something? You know, you'd probably put some time into it, maybe some energy and that kind of thing. Well, it's worth putting the time and energy and money into finding a good spouse. So I recommend doing one of the paid sites. Especially if you're a girl, you want to make sure that the first date that you would meet up on, if you've met online, you haven't met the person in person, make sure it's in a very public area. Maybe you could do a double date or something, I don't know. But something in a public area anyway, because there's a lot of creeps out there. And the last thing you want to do is go meet some guy at his house or something like that for your first date. Don't do anything stupid like that. A good pickup line, quote unquote, would be to ask a person that you're interested in where they go to church. Remember I told you what my dad's cousin told me? You know, when you meet a girl, ask her where she goes to church. So there's your pickup line. These other stupid pickup lines don't work, so don't even try. But and a lot of them are just ungodly anyway, so you wouldn't want to use them, period. But a good pickup line would be, where do you go to church? And a good woman would like hearing that kind of thing. This will give you an idea of where they're coming from theologically, and it'll also open a door of communication between the two of you. So maybe you don't know what to talk about, but it's real easy if you're a Christian. You say, where do you go to church? Well, then all of a sudden you have a lot of things to talk about and argue about. And then she's got lots of reasons to leave and never talk to you again, in my experience anyway. Some people are smart and they actually establish some kind of a rapport with somebody before you throw the NIV versus, you know, the take away from the deity of Christ Adam or something like that, you know. But, to each his own, I guess. You'd think I'd learn after a while. Apparently not. Now, this will likely be a long-term strategy, and it's going to require much patience. Look at Psalm 27 in verse 14. Much patience. Might be years of patience. And you may very well get tired of it and give it up for a while. Been there. But you just have to wait. You have to wait on the Lord. And this could be the trial of your faith. We're not being burned at the stake at this present moment. We're not being drowned or we're not being beaten or anything like that. But this may be your trial of faith. Are you willing to wait for the woman or for the man that God has for you? Or I shouldn't say thee, but a woman or a man that God has for you. I'm not one of these that believes there's only one out there. But are you willing to wait? Or are you just going to give up and say, well, I'm not going to do it at all, or give up and say, well, I'm just going to marry this person. I like them. Yeah, they're not a member of the church, but she's nice, he's nice, I'm sure we can get along. Are you going to give in, or are you going to wait, and wait for the Lord to provide? Do you believe that he can provide? He can. I mean, this is the God that created the universe, right? He can easily provide you a spouse. Do you believe it, though? Psalm 27 and verse 14. Psalm 27 and verse 14. Just don't get desperate out there. Just set it up in your heart, resolve in your heart to say, you know what? I'm going to be faithful to God no matter what. And if I'm single the rest of my life, I'm going to be faithful to God. I'm not going to compromise on my beliefs. I'm not going anywhere. I'm going to be faithful to God in his house. And if he provides me with a spouse, fine and dandy. If he doesn't, I'm still going to be faithful. And you just hold on to that and wait on the Lord. Psalm 27 in verse 14. Wait on the Lord, be of good courage, and he shall strengthen thine heart. Wait, I say, on the Lord. That's tough. It's tough to wait, but wait. Remember the parable of the sower. He sows in the field, and then he waits with long patience, and eventually, up comes the crop. The Lord eventually gives the increase. Finding a wife, Proverbs 18:22, whoso findeth a wife, findeth a good thing and obtaineth favor of the Lord. Finding a wife requires seeking. Remember what Jesus said in Matthew 7 and verse 7. Matthew 7:7, ask and it shall be given you. Seek and ye shall find. Knock and it shall be opened unto you. So if you want a wife, if you want to find a wife, you've got to seek for a wife. Just sitting there and thinking the Lord's just somebody's going to knock on your door someday and he's going to bring one to you. You're going to have some arranged marriage. That's probably not going to happen. If you want a wife, you got to seek. But look at what it says there. Ask and it shall be given you. So if you ask for a wife and you ask in faith and you ask according to the will of God, it'll be given you. Ask and it shall be given you. Seek and ye shall find a wife. Knock. And we'll just leave that one alone right now. When in regard to a wife anyway. Ask and it shall be given though. Seek and ye shall find. I love Psalm 37, verses 4 through 5. Delight thyself also in the Lord, and he shall give thee the desires of thine heart. Commit thy way unto the Lord. Trust also in him, and he shall bring it to pass. I'm going to read it again. Delight thyself also in the Lord. If the Lord is your delight, more than a relationship, more than even your personal happiness, if the Lord is your delight, he shall give thee the desires of thine heart. But you have to commit thy way unto the Lord. Trust also in him, and he shall bring it to pass. It's a faith issue. You've got to trust the Lord that he'll do it. And sometimes you have to wait a long time. How long did you wait, Steve? Long time, right? Long time. But he will bring it to pass, if it is his will. Now, finding a husband. Much of the previous instruction was primarily directed at men who are the ones who are traditionally doing the asking and seeking when it comes to dating. So much of what I was saying there, I was really addressing men in particular. Women traditionally are the ones who are asked on dates, though this is increasingly changing in our modern world. Like the story that I told you a while back. A lot of times now, women are asking men on dates. I think women even propose to men for marriage now, which is crazy in my opinion. But anyway, things are changing. But traditionally, and if you're a Christian, more than likely the woman that you meet is going to have a Christian mindset, and men are going to be the one that are going to be doing the asking. The best thing that a woman can do to find a husband is to be a virtuous woman, and good men will take care of the asking part. So if you just be a virtuous woman, if you be a godly woman, a man is going to see that, and he'll do the asking. You don't have to worry about you doing the asking. Now, if a woman sees a man that she's interested in, she could always use a third party to let him know that she's interested in him. You know, tell a friend to tell his friend or something, hey, she likes you. And maybe then he'll ask you out on a date. So you could go that way. There's all kinds of ways. I don't need to tell you all the nitty-gritty details. But anyway, just some things that I thought I might share with you. So let's look at some qualities to generally look for in a potential spouse. Now, remember at the beginning of the study last week, I said that this study is going to be important for everybody in this room, in this church, no matter who you are, whether you're single or whether you're married or whether you're old or young. Well, some of these general qualities here, even if you are married and you're not looking for a spouse, you still need to exhibit all these qualities. All of us do. So when I'm going through these qualities and saying, here's what you'll look for in a potential spouse, be thinking about yourself and saying, well, do I have these qualities? Is my spouse happy because I have these qualities, or is this something that I need to work on? Now, first of all, I want to cover the general qualities of both men and women. And then later, which will probably be next Sunday, then I want to talk about specific qualities for men, which are specific to them, and then specific qualities for women. But right now, I'm going to talk about general qualities. The first one is honesty. Honesty is honorable character. It's formally, in a wide general sense, including all kinds of moral excellence worthy of honor. It's uprightness of disposition and conduct, integrity, truthfulness, straightforwardness, the quality opposed to lying, cheating, or stealing. So a lot of times when we think of honesty, we just think of not telling a lie. But really the honesty and honest, and I will define honest here presently, it goes along with more than just that. It's the idea of integrity. It's just of being a good person, an honest person is. The honest is an adjective describing a person is having honorable motives or principles marked by uprightness or probity, in early use in a wide sense of good moral character, virtuous, upright, well-disposed, that deals fairly and uprightly in speech and act, sincere, truthful, candid, that will not lie, cheat, or steal. The prevailing modern sense, the honest man, being a good citizen, the law-abiding man, as opposed to the rogue, thief, or enemy of society. So an honest person is someone who is virtuous, upright. They're of good moral character. Not just only never telling a lie, but just that good, virtuous person. Honesty is a characteristic of the life of a Christian, or should be. 1 Peter 2 and verse 12. This would be a no-brainer. If you meet somebody and you catch them lying on a date, just leave that person right now. That is a telltale sign that this is a person you do not want to be involved with. 1 Peter 2 and verse 12. Having your conversation, that is your manner of life, honest among the Gentiles, that whereas they speak evil, or they speak against you as evildoers, they may by your good works, which they shall behold, glorify God in the day of visitation. So you want to have your manner of life honest among the Gentiles, Peter says. A Christian should speak the truth in his heart as well as in his mouth. And boy, this is an important point. A lot of times you can't tell what somebody is speaking in their heart. You can only tell what comes out of their mouth. But remember, out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaketh. You can tell what's going on inside the heart by what they say. But this is something that I want each of us to think about. Turn to Psalm 15:2 while I'm talking. Psalm 15:2. Think about this, whether you speak the truth in your heart. Maybe whenever it comes to speaking out of your mouth, you don't tell lies and you always tell the truth. But do you tell the truth in your heart? Do you tell yourself the truth? You know, the Bible talks about not deceiving yourself. Do you deceive yourself? Do you say to yourself, oh, that wasn't that bad. Oh, I'm not that bad. I mean, I'm not as bad as this guy. You know, you're not telling the truth in your heart then. You want to make sure that you're speaking in your heart. You want to make sure that when nobody's around, that you are being an honest person. Nobody's looking and you're not looking at pornography on the internet when nobody's around. That's a person that speaks the truth in their heart, not just outwardly whenever somebody's watching. Look at Psalm 15. Oh, I'm in Proverbs 15. There, after all that talking, and I wasn't even on the right book. Psalm 15 and verse 2. It says, he that walketh uprightly and worketh righteousness and speaketh the truth in his heart. This is the characteristics of the godly. Go read Psalm 15, one of the most beautiful psalms, in my opinion, out there. Speak the truth in your heart. It's the person that's of an honest and a good heart that brings forth good fruit in his life. You want to be guaranteed that you're going to find a person that will bring forth good fruit, be a good husband and wife? Find the person that is honest, that is brutally honest, and that will not tell a lie, even if it means his own hurt. Look at Luke 8 and verse 15. Luke 8 and verse 15. This is the parable of the sower. And this is the fourth group of people on the good ground. And it says, but that on the good ground are they which in an honest and good heart, having heard the word, keep it and bring forth fruit with patience. The person that's honest, the person that has an honest heart, is the person that's going to stick with the faith and they're going to bear fruit. Therefore, if you want to know if a man has an honest and a good heart, you look at the fruit in his life, because honest people with an honest heart bring forth fruit. So look at the fruit in a person's life, and then you can see if they're an honest person or not. Integrity is the next one. Integrity is the condition of having no part or element taken away or wanting, undivided or unbroken state, material wholeness, completeness, entirety. Now, this is speaking of a physical definition of integrity. Like if you have a piece of steel and it has integrity, it means that there's no broken part in it, there's no weakness in it, it is tried and true the whole way through. Now, in a moral sense, it is unimpaired moral state, freedom from moral corruption, innocence, sinlessness, soundness of moral principle, the character of uncorrupted virtue, especially in relation to truth and fair dealing, uprightness, honesty, sincerity. You think about a man's integrity as his moral compass, which guides him through life. And I got a verse for that, Proverbs 11 and verse 3. It's pretty hard if you're out there, if you ever try to navigate through the woods or through the desert, and you don't have a compass, you don't know where you're going, you're going to get lost, right? Think about a man's integrity as that compass, and it guides him through life so he can stay on that straight and narrow path. Proverbs 11 and verse 3 says, the integrity of the upright shall guide them, but the perverseness of transgressors shall destroy them. So you've heard it said, let your heart be your guide. No, let your integrity be your guide, not your heart. You've got to guide your heart. You'll be much better off to marry a poor man with integrity than a morally corrupt rich man. There's more to life than money. And I would much rather, if I was a woman, be married to a man of meager income that has integrity and has honesty and is a good, virtuous man. You'll be a lot better off. Look at Proverbs 19 and verse 1. Better is the poor that walketh in his integrity than he that is perverse in his lips and is a fool. A man with integrity will have a blessed family. Isn't that what you want when you're looking for a good man or a good woman? You want to have ultimately somebody that's going to raise a good and a blessed family with you? Well, look for somebody with integrity. Proverbs 7 or 20 and verse 7 says, the just man walketh in his integrity, his children are blessed after him. You want to bless your children? You want to leave them a good inheritance? Be a man of integrity. That will be a good inheritance for them, because you will have left them an example of a good life to follow. Whether you leave them money and riches or anything is really ancillary to the fact of whether you've left them a good example. That's the inheritance that you want to leave for your kids. A good man maintains his integrity even when going through severe affliction and persecution. Look at Job 2 and verse 3. Just think about all that Job went through. And yet he never turned on God. His wife said, curse God and die. But Job never did that. Why didn't he do that? Because he was a man of integrity. Even the devil recognized this. I think it was the devil that recognized it. Let me read Job 2 and verse 3. And the Lord said unto Satan, hast thou considered my servant Job, that there is none like him in the earth, a perfect and an upright man, one that feareth God and escheweth evil? And still, no, this is, pardon me, this is God that was saying this. And escheweth evil, and still holdeth fast his integrity, although thou movest me against him to destroy him without cause. I was thinking it was the devil that said basically, well, yeah, you haven't touched his flesh, right? You've taken his stuff, but you haven't touched his flesh. Touch his flesh and he'll curse you and die. So even the devil did recognize that Job still had integrity, but the devil thought that Job, or that he could break Job's integrity. But God says here, here's a man of integrity. Here's a man, even though you take everything away from him, though he slay me, yet will I trust in him. I think that was Job that said that, as a matter of fact. That's a man of integrity. Let's see what the time is. I just want to do one more here. One more. It's been an hour. This will just take you just a few minutes. Faithfulness and commitment. There's just some things I just really want to say on this one, so I didn't want to quit right now. Faithfulness is the quality of being faithful. It's fidelity, loyalty to a superior or friend, trustworthiness, conscientiousness. It's strict adherence to one's pledged word, honesty, sincerity. So faithfulness, a faithful person, is one who has fidelity and loyalty. It's one who sticks tenaciously to his word. When he tells you he's going to do something, he does it. When he makes that commitment, when he puts his hand to the plow and he does not turn back, he doesn't look back. He's the guy that joins the church, that's baptized, that goes through hard times and says, no, I will stick with this faith. I will stick to my commitment to the Lord no matter what. That's a faithful man. A faithful man, in case you haven't noticed, is hard to find. There aren't too many out there. Look at Proverbs 20 and verse 6. You can find anywhere out there people that will let you down, people that don't keep their word. I mean, they're a dime a dozen. Find that one person that is utterly faithful. Find that person that you know when you say, hey, I need to count on you for this, and you have no doubt whatsoever that they're going to come through with it. Find that person. That's a hard person to find. Proverbs 20 and verse 6. Find that person when he says, hey, I'll call you tomorrow, and you actually think in your mind, okay, I'm going to be around because I know he's going to call. There's a lot of people that I know. When they say, I'll call you tomorrow, I just, honestly, it doesn't mean a thing to me. And I just really think, oh, they're not going to call tomorrow. They just said that. And there are a lot of people out there like that. Proverbs 20 and verse 6. And you just plan your life accordingly. When you know you're dealing with a faithful man, he says, I'll call you tomorrow, or I'll be there tomorrow, whatever, then you plan that he's actually going to be there. When you're dealing with the other guy, you just plan to do whatever the heck you want because you know he's not going to call anyway, or he's not going to show up or whatever. Proverbs 20 and verse 6. Most men will proclaim every one his own goodness, but a faithful man who can find? Oh, anybody out there will tell you what a great guy they are. I mean, there's lots of men that will tell you that. But a faithful man, that's a rare find. A faithful man will abound with blessings. Look at Proverbs 20 or 28 and verse 20. Proverbs 28 and verse 20. It says, a faithful man shall abound with blessings, but he that maketh haste to be rich shall not be innocent. So once again, you want to have a blessed house, you want to have a blessed family, a blessed marriage, find yourself a faithful man. Find that man that puts his hand to the plow and doesn't look back. Find that man that when he says, I'm going to do something, he does it. Find that woman that says, when she says she's going to do something, she does it. If a man is faithful in the small things, he'll be faithful in the big things, like a lifelong commitment to marriage. You want to know? I mean, probably one of the scariest things is when you're finding somebody to marry, you're thinking, I hope I've found the right one. I hope I've found a good one. How do you really know? You can only know somebody so well before you get married to them. Well, Find a person that's faithful in the little things, and he will be or she will be faithful in the big things. Because it's easy to fudge on the little things. Most people, a lot of times people will be faithful in the bigger things, you know, because they got a lot more face to lose on that one. But a lot of times, like, the little stuff, who cares? You know, I told somebody I'd call them back. It's not a big deal. You know, nobody does that anymore. But find a person that's faithful in the little ones. He'll definitely be faithful in the big ones. So, Luke 16 and verse 10. And by the way, I'm not referring to anybody in the church that hasn't called me back, that told me they were going to or anything. I do have another person in my life, not in the church, that I do think of that always tells me, I'll call you tomorrow, I'll call you tonight, I'll call you whenever. And I just know, and I love the guy, he's not going to call back. And I just plan on him not calling back. That's just the way it is. So don't think that I'm clandestinely trying to rebuke you or something and not saying it. Luke 16 and verse 10. Although sometimes I may be. So don't just think, oh, he must not be talking about us. I might be. So examine your hearts whenever you hear me say something. Luke 16 and verse 10. Jesus said, "He that is faithful in that which is least is faithful also in much. And he that is unjust in the least is unjust also in much." Find a guy who's unjust in the least, and this is a guy that will be unjust in much. Find a guy that walks away from the cashier and she handed him a 10 instead of a 1 and he walks off and says, ha, my lucky day. That's a guy that will be unfaithful in much. If he's unfaithful in little. Or if it was a quarter and it should have been a nickel or whatever it was. Find the guy that would go out of his way to go back and tell that cashier, you made a mistake. You gave me too much money. That's a faithful man. Find somebody like that. On the other hand, if a man is not faithful in the small things, he will likely not be faithful in the big things. Look at verse 11 and 12. If therefore ye have not been faithful in the unrighteous mammon, who will commit to your trust the true riches? And if ye have not been faithful in that which is another man's, who shall give you that which is your own? Kids, if you're not faithful with what your parents give you, who's going to give you your own? If they give you the car and you go out there and trash it, or they give you, you know, money to whenever you go out somewhere to the fair or something, and if you just blow it all indiscriminately, you think God's going to just be doling out blessings to you with a good job and your own income and everything else if you can't be faithful with the little that he has given you from your parents or from somebody else? Just as an example. And you guys did great at the fair. Once again, not talking about you, just kind of trying to think of some example. You guys did good. They brought home a bunch of money when you guys gave it to them. Good kids. Pay attention to the small things in a man's life. Does he do what he said he would do? Does he call what he said he would call? Does he cancel on you for non-emergencies? Is this the kind of person you're dating somebody and they're constantly canceling on you because something else came up, a.k.a. somebody more important than you came up? Is he always canceling on you? Does he keep his word even when it costs him to do so? Here's a faithful man. Let me give you a verse. This is a faithful man. The guy that makes a promise to do something, maybe even when he wasn't thinking and it wasn't a very wise promise to make, and yet he follows through though it costs him dearly. In Psalm 15 in verse 4, it says, "In whose eyes a vile man is contemned, but he honoreth them that fear the Lord. He that sweareth not to his own, or he that sweareth to his own hurt and changeth not." The guy that makes a vow that says, I will do this. The guy that makes a vow as a contractor to a company and says, I will do this job for thus and so amount of money. And then he finds out that, boy, this was a lot harder than I thought, but it's a fixed cost project. And I will finish this job, even if it costs me finance, even if I lose money on it, I will finish this job. That's a faithful man. You could always go back with an engineering change order and maybe he'll do that. But if they wouldn't, you do it anyway and you lose the money because you gave him your word. Your word is your bond. If your word's no good, what is good? If you don't have a person that their word is good, they are no good. There's not any good in them. Look at Ecclesiastes 5, 4 through 5. Ecclesiastes 5, 4 through 5. This will be the closing verse for this morning. When thou vowest a vow unto God, defer not to pay it, for he hath no pleasure in fools. pay that which thou hast vowed. Better it is that thou shouldest not vow than that thou shouldest vow and not pay. God has no pleasure in fools. When you make a vow, you keep that vow. Now, if that was a sinful vow prior to your conversion, you vow to be, you know, faithful to the Pope all the days of your life or something, that's a different story. But if you make a vow, even if it was a stupid vow, you know, for the next year, I'm going to get up and I'm going to exercise for an hour a day or whatever. I'm not saying that's a stupid vow, but if you do that, keep your vow. Don't make, especially if you vow to God. I'll just give you a little hint. Just vow to yourself. Don't vow to God. You make a vow to God, you better keep it. You better be up exercising for an hour a day or whatever. I'm very careful about vows that I make to God. I don't make vows to God very often. I'll make a vow to God to things that God tells me to do. I will, and I have vowed to God that I will stay faithful to His church all the days of my life with God being my helper. And I can vow that, and I'm not afraid to make that vow because that's what God tells me to do. I can make a vow that I'm going to not have sex before marriage because God says not to do that. And I will make a vow to God about that with God as my helper. But don't make silly vows because God hath no pleasure in fools, and He will judge you for not keeping your vow. But anyway, that's the kind of a person you want to look for. You want to look for that faithful person that keeps his word even when it hurts him. So thank you for your kind and patient attention. We'll pick up next time talking about humility, the next virtue of a person, of a good potential spouse. Thanks for your time.